whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's a terrific Tuesday. So glad to have you with us. Man, we've been busy. According to one listener on our social media, we're having way too much fun on this edition of the show. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of fun to be had. And as always, I'm trying to jam things in where I maybe overcommitted or overpromised because I got very eager. I do that a lot. In fact, you ask anyone who knows me, and I'm extremely ambitious when it comes to weekends. For instance, the cleaning I'll get done or the projects around the house. And then, of course, there aren't enough hours in the day, like there aren't enough hours in the show to get everything done that I want to. But I did make a promise to update you about the neighbor's obnoxious light. So I will do that. I absolutely promise before this half hour is done. Now we've got your candidates for TD of the week. We just revealed in the last few minutes. You can vote now at Amy After Hours. And I will also retweet. I'll get that up on our Facebook page as well. I feel like we've got a Raven streak going on here the last few weeks when it comes to Monday MVP, which we have yet to reveal for this week. When it comes to TD of the week, the Ravens are right in the mix. Why? Well, because the Ravens are one of the hottest teams in the NFL. And that was once again underscored on Monday night. So we'll get to the first game of the Monday night doubleheader, which they actually had to ratchet up the degree of difficulty by putting themselves into a 10-0 hole first before they found their rhythm and their groove and turned on the afterburners. And yeah, that's not just Lamar Jackson. But as I say, you can vote for TD of the week at Amy After Hours and soon on Facebook. Now, what else we're doing on this edition of the show through week 7, we're going to give you the Chiefs. The only team that's undefeated, 2-time defending Super Bowl champion. The thing about the Chiefs is they win even though they're not yet playing their best football. And I think you could say that about most of the teams, that there are games they've left out there, points they left out there, opportunities that they have not capitalized on. When it comes to the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes just told us on Sunday that at some point, they'll start to play well. I'm paraphrasing, but that was what he was saying, is at some point, I feel like we'll start to play well. And he's mostly referring to the offense, and he's referring to the fact that he's thrown too many interceptions, and at times, they're still settling for field goals when they should be capitalizing on their opportunities in the red zone. They are not a great red zone team, and yet, they are 6-0. And because of their experience and their wisdom, well, they absolutely are the toughest out in football. They don't have to be the best team in terms of record, though they just happen to be. But until you knock out the Chiefs, you've not won a damn thing. So the Chiefs are tops in our, we'll call them the After Hours Power Rankings. Just, we're looking for top five. I don't do this every week because it gets kind of boring to me. And people become really obsessed with it when honestly all they are is just subjective ranking, subjective lists. But I know in sports we love to rank things, so let's go. Let's rank them. We're giving you the Chiefs. Who else make up the top five in the NFL right now? 855-212-4227. We've taken a few of your calls. Also at Amy After Hours and, you know, on Facebook. The Ravens started in an 0-2 hole. But until last night, they'd rattled off 4 consecutive wins. Well, it's pretty easy to see their hallmark. Right now, they're running the ball like nobody's business. Not one game this season have they failed to rack up at least 150 yards rushing. So that, of course, has a lot to do with the addition of Derrick Henry. Thing is, and this has always been the case with Derrick, you can know he's getting the ball. You can know that Henry is the best option. It's one thing to know. It's entirely another to do something about it. And so with Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson in the same backfield, it's like a spark. Energy, strength, power, explosiveness. It's clear that Derrick Henry has not lost a step at 30 years old. That's pshaw. That's this kind of weird ethereal number. And it's based on, of course, years and years of running backs, but Derrick Henry's a Hall of Famer, so you can't really judge him based on what else we know about running backs. So they start out at 0-2 on the season, and then they start out in a big hole against the Buccaneers in Tampa on Monday night.
Now Sterling Shepard sees action as a wide out to the right side. He comes in motion, one back set, Sean Tucker. Play action fake, dropping back as Baker Mayfield looks toward, throws the ball toward the end zone. It's a caught ball! Touchdown, Tampa Bay! Mike Evans has his 100th! 100 touchdowns for number 13! Fire those cannons! Fire them again!
It was good that the Buccaneers were back in Tampa with their fans after having spent time during Hurricane Milton before and after, and obviously playing against the Saints there in New Orleans. Mike Evans nearly had touchdown number 101 in his career earlier, or a little bit later in that first quarter, as you hear with Gene Deckerhoff on Buccaneers radio. But the ball slipped out of his hands in the back of the end zone, and as it did, he collided with the defender and ended up grabbing his hamstring. Now, he'd been dealing with hamstring issues throughout the week. We know that because we'd heard it from Todd Bowles and just knew that he wasn't practicing as much. And he's dealt with hammies in the past. Unfortunately, on that second opportunity in the end zone, he was unable to get back in the game. And he looked like he was in a lot of pain. So that sucked. And you asked Baker Mayfield about what changed when they lost Mike Evans. I mean, it's pretty clear that changes the entire Tampa offense.
Yeah, wind kind of got taken out of our sails at that point. It just, anytime you're in the red zone, have turnover, obviously can't do that. I mean, Marlon Humphrey's made a good play, falling off of it, but I got to be careful with it down there, knowing that we already have points. That really was the swing of the game, and they got the ball and went down and scored. So it's, that was a big momentum shift in the game.
So losing Mike Evans, but then you hear Baker Mayfield talk about what happened after that. Yeah, this was definitely the turning point. Trying to force a ball into the end zone, trying to force the ball downfield when you don't have your top receiver, defense is clued in, and of course it's a veteran in Marlon Humphrey that does the damage.
Two deep safeties. Baker Mayfield wants to throw on 3rd and 13. Fires near sideline. Picked off again! At the 40-yard line, Marlon Humphrey with his second pick of the night.
Jerry Sandusky on Ravens radio. You know, the first one was in the end zone, which is particularly damaging. But back-to-back interceptions in the second quarter, courtesy of Marlon Humphrey, off Baker Mayfield. And that really flips the momentum in this game. Baltimore ends up with 10 points off turnovers there in the first half. And boom, has come right back in. And as much as you could say the Ravens were likely to score at some point, you don't want to give them extra opportunities. You don't want to put the ball back in Lamar Jackson's hands. And Baker also had a handful of interceptions last week. And so those were particularly damaging against a team as good as the Ravens that just hadn't found their footing. Then to start the third quarter, there's a missed field goal for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers that gives the Ravens a shorter field.
On 2nd and 17, Lamar to throw. Going deep, near side. He's got Bateman open at the 5. Touchdown, Rashad Bateman! And the Ravens strike again! 49 yards from Lamar Jackson.
That's one of our candidates for After Hours TD of the Week on this Touchdown Tuesday. Again, you can find that poll on either of our social media sites. So, yeah, you've got interceptions that lead to points. You've got missed field goal that leads to points. And then you've got a Derrick Henry who will not be denied.
Lamar under center. Gives to Henry, left side, breaks through the line, cross the 15,
oh, he's
20,
gone.
Leg race down the sideline, 40, midfield, the train is rolling, he's
gone.
To the 30, 20, 15, and he's taken off his feet at the 10. Derrick Henry flips the field with one run.
Once again, the call there on Ravens radio, he was nearly gone, and you want to know why? Because Lamar Jackson was blocking for him. How about that? Terrific stuff to see a Lamar Jackson. Now, it's not terrific if he gets hurt, of course, but he's tough, and he wanted to help clear a lane for his powerful running back, and boy, did he. And so, yes, Lamar's an athlete, not just a quarterback. sometimes there are differences. And he's able to actually move one defender aside to run interference enough that Derrick Henry was able to get out to the sideline. No, he ultimately stepped out of bounds, but really neat to see those two working together. This is one of my favorite stories of the season, is Derrick Henry in that Ravens backfield and the fact that he's exceeding many expectations. That's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. That long 81-yard scamper led to Mark Andrews catching a 4-yard touchdown, his second of the game. And now Andrews is the all-time leading touchdown receiver in Ravens history at that tight end position.
Incredibly grateful. And, you know, just thinking back, you got to think about, getting drafted to this incredible organization with I've been blessed with with incredible teammates, obviously number 8, and having that connection. But I'm fortunate to have, incredible teammates, unselfish guys, and just keep on going. I'm, coaches, players, everybody. And you got to look back at the guys like Todd Heap and the guys that have done it before you, and just be grateful that I'm in this situation and blessed. And like you said, just taking it week by week, I'm not satisfied.
It's got to feel good considering that he really missed a ton of time and had a long road back after a leg injury last season. But now he becomes the Ravens' all-time leading tight end. The touchdowns that he's gathered, he's into the 40s now. Is it 42, 43? But he passed Todd Heap, which is why he mentioned Todd as he was talking about it after the game. There's lots of history here, which is neat. So we talked Mike Evans and Mark Andrews, and how about the fact that the Ravens, again, are over 200 yards rushing in this one, 244 to be exact. Lamar has 5 passing touchdowns, but it becomes a lot easier to throw the ball, and you see the defense open up when you have a passing attack that's as physical. Can move the line. You got a line, of course, that's blocking for these guys, but is as potent as what they have with Henry and also with Lamar Jackson. So they get in a 10-0 hole, but then put 34 straight points on the board, 6 consecutive scoring drives. And even though at the end there were opportunities for the Bucs to get back into it, right? So an onside kick attempt, and they were able to score a few touchdowns kind of in a flurry there in the fourth quarter. For the most part, the Ravens had this game in hand. Now, that doesn't mean that you pull all of your starters. At this point, late in the game, a couple of minutes to go, it's a 2-score game. Crazier things have happened. Goodness, we know this is the case always in the NFL, where you've got all kinds of nutty stuff that happens, whether it's turnovers. And let's be fair, Lamar Jackson's been known to turn the ball over in some sticky situations and lead to opportunities for the other team. It just happened, actually, against the Cincinnati Bengals. Remember that game that went into overtime a couple weeks ago? There was a late fumble by Lamar Jackson. Yeah, crazy stuff happens in the final couple minutes of a game. So without Mike Evans, of course, Chris Godwin is going to be on the field. Unfortunately, Chris suffers an injury. There was some talk of a hip drop tackle. I didn't see it. It was kind of a weird. I saw it on video. Well, saw the game and then saw it on video. I didn't see the hip drop tackle necessarily. It's kind of a weird angle, some of the replays that I've seen. So I don't know if it's classified as that yet. But it does appear as though he suffered a dislocated ankle. It was awful to look at. They didn't want to replay it on ESPN because of how his ankle and his foot was pointed in a different direction. I certainly understand why it's frustrating when you've got just a couple minutes left in the game, but I do not understand the need to blame Todd Bowles for having what is now his top receiver, because there's no Mike Evans, on the field to try to, in some way, force the issue and potentially send the game into overtime. And the questions persist, though, because it was frustrating. Baker Mayfield slams his helmet down on the field. They could all tell right away that Godwin has incurred a serious injury and could potentially be gone for a long period of time. But to blame this on Todd Bowles because his veteran receiver is in the game in that late stage, that to me is unfair.
He's a player. We're trying to win the ball game. We were still down 10. We're trying to get extra points and kick another onside kick. It just happened. We don't second guess. We got our guys. We're playing everybody we got. It's unfortunate he got hurt. We feel bad about that, but he's a football player, and he wanted to be in the game, just like Baker and everybody else wanted to be in the game.
Yeah, nobody says a word about Godwin being on the field if he walks off at the end of the game with his teammates. And I did see it. He had to be helped off the field. He was obviously in pain. He said, you could see the lip reading on camera when his face was on camera. What a shame. So I think he knew it was serious. They all knew it was serious. And that sucks. But if he's in the game at the end and he walks off the field, nobody's complaining about how the wide receiver was still in the game when they're down by 10 with a couple minutes to go. It's actually not all that crazy. I mean, think about the number of comebacks we've seen. Anybody remember the 13 seconds going back to the playoffs a couple years ago? Of course. Crazy crap happens in the NFL. I know people want to blame someone, and maybe Todd Bowles is the easy person to blame, but come on. Chris Godwin wanted to be on the field too. And again, without Mike Evans, to me, it wouldn't have made sense if he was sitting on the sidelines, actually. I mean, you've got all your starters out there because they're trying to force the issue and see if somehow they can get back to even with the Ravens. But it does suck, of course, that both Mike Evans and Chris Godwin were hurt. I mean, they've really been kind of the veteran presence on the offensive side as they've changed coaches and offensive coordinators and, of course, now quarterbacks these last couple of years. I mean, it's been Evans and Godwin that have kind of towed the line and have helped to stabilize the offense, even with all the changes around them. So, like I said, I think that they're pretty sure it's a dislocated ankle and that he could miss the rest of the season. Maybe that's not the case. It does stink for all of them, especially Chris, but there's no reason. I think it just goes over the top to blame someone for him being out there on the field. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. The Bucks, you know, they're kind of coming back to even, or coming back to the pack, I should say, with the NFC South. And this is the way that it's been now for a couple of years, right? No team really creates a whole lot of separation. Even at the end of Tom Brady's tenure there, you've got them battling, all of them, it seems like, battling to the end of the season. And right now, Atlanta losing a tough one at home against the Seahawks. I don't want to say giving that game away, credit the Seahawks, but the way the Falcons finished that game was brutal. And so they're now 4-3, as are the Buccaneers 4-3. Meanwhile, the Ravens have won 5 in a row. And yeah, they put themselves in that 10-0 hole. But to be able to not just dig out of it, but also to be able to win their 5th straight. They're one of the hottest teams in the league right now.
I feel like you look at it and there's a lot of things we can get better at and we can improve upon, certainly. And we will keep striving for that, for sure. But I think all three phases, even though all three phases could have done some things better, certainly, and we'll talk about those, all three phases came through and they had to in a big way.
Especially that offense. Well, not only the offense. The defense was the catalyst. But 17 for 22, Lamar through the air, 281, 5 touchdowns. And that goes along with the 244 yards rushing, another massive game for Derrick Henry. What is your TD of the week on this Touchdown Tuesday at A-Law Radio or also on our Facebook page? And where do you put the Ravens in your top 5 in the NFL right now? I think it's pretty standard that Chiefs, Ravens, Lions, in whatever particular order, are what we're hearing the most from those of you who are weighing in. But who else do you include in the top 5? I've been toying with a couple different options. So again, you can weigh in on either of our social media sites. Good morning to you. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We got updates on quarterback injuries coming up. And I did promise to let you know about the light, the obnoxious light next door. Seriously, of all the questions I get, producer Pete, the light is number one. The last 3 weeks, what's up with the light? Anything to happen with the light? What's going on with the neighbor and the light?
You get at least 3 questions, every one question on
football. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Now it's time to name the After Hours Monday MVP. I need a hero.
2 receivers stacked right, 3 receivers left. Wilson now will bring Ward in motion from the left. He'll stop on Wilson's right hip. Wilson gets the snap, back to pass, throws a fade, right corner of the end zone. Pickens is there, makes the catch, touchdown Steelers. And 11-yard touchdown from Russell Wilson to George Pickens. Wilson takes the snap. Here's a sneak, a shove from behind by Hayward. No signal yet. They're coming in to look. The The official on the far side briefly marked him short, but now I think they're talking about it. Did Wilson get in? Steelers obviously are saying yes. And now the officials agree. Touchdown Russell Wilson, a 1 yard touchdown run. And the Steelers increase their lead.
That's the biggest thing right now is there's a lot more room that we can grow, and we're gonna go for it, and we're gonna celebrate tonight. But when that clock strikes in the morning, that sun comes up in the morning, we got to get better.
I thought he was excellent. I thought he got better as the game went on, man. But I'm not surprised by that, man. It's been a while since he's played some ball, but I thought he settled in, knocked the rust off, man, and distributed the ball around and played well.
Just ball and life. I like how Mike Tomlin points out he got better as the game went on. It's a good thing he got better as the game went on, but I agree with him. Russ was rusty. There was rust for Russ. There was rust for Russ. Uh-huh. I got caught that earlier.
If his availability or the quality of his practice participation picks up, maybe we'll consider that.
As part of the component. I wish I could do impressions, because I would try to do an impression of Mike Tomlin.
When that happens is a component of the consideration.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Hey, speaking of NFL coaches, Ron Rivera on the show later this week. We're really excited.
That's ball in life as well.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see whether or not he comes up with any cool phrases like that. But Ron, I heard recently on both Westwood One, as an analyst for a national radio broadcast, as well as on NFL Game Day. And he was the analyst alongside, I don't remember who was working with him. Patrick Claibon, actually. They were doing one of the later windows of NFL Game Day. And I loved hearing his analysis, bite-sized chunks, not too complicated, easy to see and understand what he's saying. And I learned a lot, too. And so we reached out to our friends at Westwood One, and we've got a partnership where we help one another out. I do some work for them. They help me with guests. And so producer Pete reached out to the great executive producer, Mike Eby, and he has set up a conversation with Ron Rivera on our Wednesday night show, because Ron is on the West Coast, to our understanding, which fits us perfectly. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Coming up, we've got the latest on some of the QB injuries. There's good news and there's bad news, of course. And so we're wanting to keep you updated. It does precipitate a bunch of conversations inside various team rooms now about the best way to proceed, the best way to move forward. The Raiders have already made a move to bring in another quarterback because of their situation. So we'll give you that following the update. As always, we love to connect with you at A-Law Radio. There's some photos up from my hike this weekend. Glorious colors. Love the fall colors. Unfortunately, we were with 8 million of our closest friends. But we did manage to get photos without other people in them. So that was nice. Really gorgeous hike and gorgeous views. And I will throw those up on Facebook when I have an opportunity. And also, we're asking you to rank the top 5 teams in the NFL. And that includes the Chiefs. They're a gimme as the Super Bowl champions and the only unbeaten left. Now, I promised you an update on the light. Pete, I've been stressed about this, as you know. For those of you who have not heard this before, I'll just give you the Cliff Notes version. Our next door neighbor installed what amounts to a street light. It's that bright. It's white, LED, obnoxious. And there is no cover over it. It's essentially in a globe that does not deflect the light in any way. And so it shines directly into our backyard, lights up our entire backyard, bounces off the house next to us on the other side of us because there's white siding over there. It looks like something from Chevy Chase and Christmas Vacation with all of those Christmas lights going up. And
why is the floor all wet, Todd?
Yeah, it's not only our bedroom, which is tough because we've tried blinds, 2 sets of curtains, blanket over the window. Still, the light comes through because our room is closest to that light. But it's not just that. It's shining in our skylight, brighter than the friggin' moon, in our bathroom, our spare bedroom. All the rooms on the back of our house are now lit up from dusk to dawn with this ridiculous light. So we had tried going to the neighbor. The neighbor got belligerent and nasty. And in fact, my most recent attempt to contact the neighbor, I left a kind note in a card, apologized for the fact that it had gotten a bit acrimonious, and asked if we could please compromise. We'll do the work for you, because he's an older gentleman. We'll get up there on the ladder. We'll fix it. We just, please, come up with some type of a compromise. That was 2 weeks ago, no response. And here's fun kicker. The wife, who I'd not seen in over a month, walked out of her house on Friday when we were doing yard work, took one look at me, did not say a word, went back in the house. This is a woman that I've been like friendly with for 4 years, but apparently we're no longer friendly.
The war has begun.
No, there's no war on our part, but we did finally get the town inspector out to the house. Okay, so we're building a little room on the back of our house. And so he was coming anyway because he had to pass the foundation and the framing before the contractors can move on to the next phase. And my husband had planted the bug with him because they become friendly through the whole permit process. And just so you know, there's one building department guy. I mean, that's it. It's a small town. I live in a little town in New Jersey. There's one guy who works in the building department. So everything goes through him. So my husband has had multiple conversations with him and they've developed a bit of a rapport. Joe came over to our house. That's actually his name. Joe came over to our house on Monday while I was sleeping. And while he was doing the inspection, my husband said, "We're having an issue with the neighbor and this bright light that he installed." Pointed it out to Joe. Now, this is middle of the daytime. Light's not on. Joe's response, "Say no more. That's the wrong kind of light for people to be installing on the side of their garage." He said, "I don't know why people do it. It's a security light. They're not supposed to have those in neighborhoods. Those are not supposed to be for personal homes and yards. There's, you know, these are the kind of things that should be on street lights, businesses, whatever." And he said, "Don't worry about it." But apparently there's a process. You have to go to the zoning department and lodge the complaint. So he's going to do that officially on Wednesday. And then they're going to come out in the middle of the night and see the obnoxious light. But he said, I'm only doing that because I need to do my research and my homework. He said, I can see why the light is an issue. And so he said, we'll be out at one point at night just to see it for ourselves. And he said, and then we will write an official letter of complaint, print it up on town letterhead, and deposit it with the neighbor. So he knows that he has to take the light down or to put a cover on the light. Now, what are the chances that the neighbor actually complies?
Well, then there's a next step. What is the next step then?
I don't know. A fine? Another letter? I'm not sure. I just know that he's likely to get belligerent about it again.
Right.
But here's the funny thing. This building department inspector, he caused, I wouldn't say some grief, but he caused us to jump through extra hoops with our permits. He's very meticulous, or my new word, meticular. He's a code guy. You got to abide by the code, period. It's black and white. There's no gray area. And so even as he was asking my husband, like, is the light on a motion sensor, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we tell him, well, not we. Bob told him, nope, it's on from dusk to dawn. I guess Joe's response was, oh, man. And then said, essentially didn't care much about the emotion or like where it's shining and all that jazz. Was just like, no, that's the wrong kind of light. So he's all about the code and the rules, not so much about emotion. So it's a good thing I wasn't talking to him because I get very emotional about the stupid light.
At least it looks like there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
He's all about the, oh, yeah, that's. Normally, I would laugh at your pun and your brilliant use of the language, but I'm so annoyed and so stressed out by this light that we've got company coming in November, too. So
I would hope it's gone by then. Uh-huh. If he's getting a letter and then he doesn't respond, and then, I mean.
Oh, he's going to respond.
He's going to have
in
to
fact,
respond.
My husband's pretty sure he's going to come marching up our sidewalk and pound on the door again.
That's when you call the cops.
True.
That's when you
Good
say,
point.
Get off my property.
Good point. Yeah, so I'm not looking forward to his response, but honestly, I don't care. We tried. I mean, I care a little. We tried to be nice. We tried to work it out, and he refused. So all this time, he probably thinks he's won. It's been 2.5 weeks now, and they go away and just leave the light on the whole time they're gone. It's been 2.5 weeks, and there's been nothing. Nothing's been done, so he probably thinks he's won. Oh, Pete,
or
he has another thing coming.
Or he's going to say he won, regardless of what letters are left and whatnot.
Well, I guess. I mean, he's going to have to come hell or high water. I don't think he wants to pick a fight with Joe, because I'm telling you, Joe will win. Joe is on our side now.
It's Joe.
When my husband and I were saying our prayers on Monday night, I guess it was, I was like, Lord, thank you for Joe. Thank you for Joe. All right, that's the update on the light. So essentially the light's still shining, but I feel like, as Pete says, there is, oh, there's darkness at the end of my tunnel. I need some darkness.
Let there be light.
No, I want no more light. I want darkness. Let there be darkness. Let there be night. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. QB News is next. Here's your latest sports update. And here's Marco Belletti.
Infinity Sports Network. Sports Flash.
All right, Amy, well, the Ravens spotted the Bucs a 10-point lead and then just took over.
Here on third down and seven from the Bucs 13, Lamar wants to throw. Slings it. Complete. Henry at the five. The King is in. Five touchdown passes for Lamar. And with 6:32 left to play in Tampa, the Hayes in the barn.
Fifth and final touchdown pass of the night for Lamar Jackson, who threw for 281, ran for another 52. Derrick Henry, 15 carries, 169 yards, as the Ravens overpowered the Bucs 41-31. Call courtesy of the Ravens Radio Network. Baker Mayfield, 370 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 picks. And worse for Tampa, Mike Evans left with a hamstring injury, and Chris Godwin carted off the field with what appeared to be a significant leg injury with under a minute remaining.
We got an ankle. Early indication that it's dislocated. We'll see. Doesn't look good.
That's head coach Todd Bowles. In the other game, Chad Ryland drilled the 32-yard field goal as time expired, lifted the Cardinals over the Chargers 17-15. Kyler Murray threw for 145, ran for another 64 yards, 2 total scores. Justin Herbert threw for 349 in the loss. Lions wide receiver Jameson Williams reportedly facing a 2-game suspension for violating the NFL's performance-enhancing substance policy. Dolphins might be getting a sight for sore eyes Sunday as Mike McDaniel giving the latest on Tua Tagovailoa.
Our plan is to start practicing on Wednesday, and you know the clearing doesn't come until after some of the activity, but we're obviously doing so in the hope of everything going well so that he can play Sunday, but that will be to be determined.
49ers lost Brandon Ayuk for the season with a torn ACL, while Deebo Samuel's in a hospital with a form of pneumonia. No timetable for his return. Washington listing Jaden Daniels as week-to-week with a rib injury. They hopefully won't miss any time. Raiders get Desmond Ridder off the Cardinals practice squad after losing Aiden O'Connell 4 to 6 weeks with a broken thumb. Just one game in the NHL, Maple Leafs ripped the Lightning 5-2, William Nylander with a pair. In NBA, Aaron Gordon and the Nuggets agreed to a 4-year deal, $133 million. I'm Marco Belletti.
This is the Infinity Sports Network. Check out our new and improved website at infinitysportsnet.com. That's infinitysportsnet.com.
Mahomes gunning it long. Coming down the near side, the pass is caught. Touchdown! City.
Three steps, throwing, loud, left corner of the end zone, touchdown!
Play action, Love, looking, winds up, there rainbows, Watson there, touchdown!
Yes!
And a Lambeau leap!
It's time for QB News on After Hours.
Portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life, the easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage with no medical exam and just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. It's not available in all states. This is where we give you the update on the quarterbacks, and there's always some good news and some bad news. We'll start with the good. Tua Tagovailoa, he has been activated and cleared to practice. So he's done with his IR stint. He is back on the practice field this week for the Miami Dolphins, and it appears as though all systems are go.
Our plan is to start practicing on Wednesday, and you know the clearing doesn't come until after some of the activity, but we're obviously doing so in the hope of everything going well so that he can play Sunday, but that will be to be determined.
Got to be smart. My entire time playing football, I've been a competitor, and that, you know, is or was sort of my edge when I would run from high school, even in college, I would do the same thing. But it's a professional, you know, setting. This is the professional level, the best of the best. You know, you just can't be doing that. So definitely got to stay more available for the team, for the organization, for our guys.
As Tua continued talking, it's clear that he's made up his mind and he's not going to be talked out of it, and also got a little agitated about this idea that his head injuries should be more serious or scrutinized more deeply than those head injuries that happen in other sports, and kind of pushing back on that.
I just think this is only becoming a thing just because of what ended up happening 2 years ago for myself within the sport. I hate that it's happened, but we don't look at boxers the same way. We don't look at hockey players the same way. But I just think because of what happened and the magnitude that had, that it's becoming more of an issue here in the league.
Well, it is an issue for the league. It's a priority of the NFL. But also, with Tua's history, there is increased danger. And we know that a lot of the studies show that the more head injuries, the more concussions, the greater chance that your long-term symptoms and side effects will be compounded and be accelerated at a more drastic rate. Now, it changes from human to human. It's not automatic, but it sounds like he feels good. The doctors still have to work with him to make sure that he's cleared completely. But he says that he is willing to take whatever risk comes with playing football.
Well, how much risk do we take when we get up in the morning to go drive to work, get into a car crash? Maybe, I don't know. Everything, I think, takes risk. So to answer that question, every time we all suit up, we're all taking a risk that we could potentially get hurt, whether it's a concussion, a broken bone, anything. You get up off of the bed the wrong way, you potentially could risk you spraining your ankle. There's just risk in any and everything. And I'm willing to play the odds.
Will you wear a guardian cap?
Nope.
Why?
Personal choice.
You may have seen some of the guardian caps that are out there. Essentially, they've got a soft cover, but they're meant to inflate upon impact and add an extra layer of protection to those who are wearing them around their brains and around their skulls. But Tua says he will not. And at this point, if the doctors clear him, then it's got to be Tua's choice. He's the one who's putting himself at risk. But also, I think that his claim about needing to be smarter and needing to make good decisions, it's not just about him, right? It's about his family. It's about his teammates. They need him to be healthy and to be out there on the field. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Kevin Stefanski talking about the loss of his starting quarterback, Deshaun Watson.
It's tough. So we feel bad for Deshaun in this case. Feel bad to lose him for the season. And we also know, as a football team, this is where you have to step up. Guys have to step up, and that's just how it goes.
Jameis Winston likely to be the starting quarterback moving forward, though it was Dorian Thompson-Robinson that was out there first when Deshaun Watson ruptured his Achilles. Jameis, a veteran guy, and they spoke highly of him before this.
Yeah, Jameis has done a nice job really going all the way back to since he's gotten here, understanding how we operate, what we do. Feel really confident in Jameis as well.
So the Cleveland Browns sitting at 1-6. Stefanski admits they've not lived up to expectations. There needs to be accountability for that. Remember last year when Deshaun Watson was out, they had a revolving door at QB until Joe Flacco and actually made the playoffs. So it doesn't seem like that's likely in 24. Looking at the NFC and the East, and Jaden Daniels, the rookie quarterback for the top team in that division, his coach, Dan Quinn, offering the update.
The status for Jaden we'll put down as week to week. As you guys know, it's a rib injury, and we'll take him through, you know, all the steps at practice and assess how he's doing and keep working it through that. We're hopeful he can play, but we'll also make sure to take every precautionary step and do it smartly for the player and the man.
Yeah, better long-term health and an eye on the long-term as much as the Commanders and their fan base are giddy over the way the season has started. He's a long-term investment, and they need him to be healthy long-term if they want him to be the franchise quarterback. Now, pivoting just a little bit, but giving you some updates on injuries for the Niners and their skill players around Brock Purdy. You know how much more difficult it is for Brock Purdy to navigate his offense without guys like Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and Christian McCaffrey, and even Juwan Jennings missing this weekend. And Kyle Shanahan, he's offering the updates on that offense.
Deebo Samuel, he had kind of a odd illness, some fluid in his lungs, so technically pneumonia. And confirming Brandon Ayuk did tear his ACL, so obviously be out for the season. Christian's still progressing through his rehab. He hasn't had any setbacks, so it's been all good news so far. Be surprised to get him back this week. But, you know, hopefully that the bye week will go well and have a much better chance there right after the bye week. And
that's tough. Christian McCaffrey still watching on the sidelines. He's going through his rehab and has had no setbacks, but it's tendonitis, so there's really not a whole lot you can do besides rest it. And it doesn't appear as though he's going to play this week and potentially maybe not even after the bye, though. Man, we all want to see him back on the field. Brandon Ayuk, that sucks. He did tear his ACL, so he'll be in for the surgery and the long rehab. DK Metcalf, actually, he suffered a knee injury on Sunday for the first-place Seahawks in the West.
So he's got a, I think it's a minor MCL. Timeline, not sure. Doesn't look like it's a long-term injury. And I know... You guys know DK. We know DK. He's going to probably do anything humanly possible to be able to play in this game, I would imagine. And we'll assess it as the week kind of unfolds here.
Mike McDonald with the first place Seahawks. Yeah, a lot of injuries coming out of week 7 and more on Monday night, where Marlon Humphrey had the two interceptions and then left with a knee injury. Mike Evans couldn't come back after tweaking his hammy again. It looked like he was in a lot of pain in that first quarter. And then Chris Godwin, final couple minutes with what appeared to be a dislocated ankle. And so really a damaging week, a lot of loss for players and locker rooms all over the NFL. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Certainly injuries are part of the deal. You know, the Kansas City Chiefs are dealing with a ton of injuries to say their running back core, not to mention their wide receiver room. And yeah, they're somehow still unbeaten. So we're giving you the Chiefs in your top five in the NFL. Who else do you put in your top five? Pete, did you give us you fill out your list?
I give you the back end. It's Texans, Packers for me. So Chiefs, Ravens, Lions, Texans, Packers.
Okay, so no Vikings for you.
No, I don't think they're going to finish it out.
All right, so now the Green Bay Packers as two teams in the NFC North. So I went Chiefs, Lions, Ravens in that order. Then it becomes harder for me. I'm putting Texans in there as well. So I'm going to go Texans at number 4. I know they missed Nico Collins. And then I'm going Commanders for now. Now, I know that they're young and that gives me some pause, but I'll put Commanders in after week number 7. Because think how Marcus Mariota came in and led them to a huge win. I know it was the Panthers, but you can find us online. Vote for TD of the Week and send us your top 5. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.